Sunday, April 5th, 2020, Desolation Angel Radio. Kip Williams, the Desolation Angel, with you. As we have been doing since the beginning of March, this show is on every night now with viewpoints, information, resources from across the country, voices of all of you talking about what's happening, giving a place of community and connection, and adding to the volume of voices. And on Sundays, I like bringing my friend Greg Haley in. He's my Meet the Press guy. I always say that. My name is Kip Williams. We'll do a piece of music here. And I actually asked Greg for the music tonight for both the intro and outro, and I think you'll like both of them because I haven't played them yet. But we'll play some music. We'll do the interview with Greg, and then I'll talk about resources right here locally and resources I know about nationally. Sit back, enjoy. Every night of the week, I love doing this, and I love being there for all of you.
That's great. It starts with an earthquake, birds and snakes, an airplane. Lenny Bruce is not afraid. I have a hurricane. Listen to yourself. Turn world serve its own needs. Dummy serve your own needs. Beat it up an ox. Speak grunt. No strength. The ladder starts to clatter with fear. Bite down. High fire in a fire. Represented seven games. The fury's breathing down your neck. Team by team reporters baffle Trump, tethered crop. Look at that, no plane, fine, then. Uh-oh, overflow, population comment, boop what it'll do. Save yourself, serve yourself, world serve its own needs. Listen to your heartbeat, dummy with the rapture and the reverend. The right, right, you patriotic, patriotic, slam, fight, right, like feeling, pretty sight.
It's the end of the world as we know it. It's the end of the world.
Slice and burn, return, listen to yourself churn. Locking in, uniform and book, burning blood, letting every motive escalate. Automotive, centerate, light a candle, light a motive, step down, watch your heel crush, crush. Uh-oh, this means no fear, cavalier, renegade, steer clear. Tournament, a tournament, a tournament of lies. Offer me solutions, offer me alternatives, and I decline.
It's the end of the world as we know it. It's the end of the world.
Lester Banks, birthday party, cheesecake, jelly bean, boom. You symbiotic, patriotic, slam, button that, right?
And in what has become a Sunday thing, which I truly like, Greg Haley is with us again. And I joke that he's my Meet the Press guy, but I truly appreciate and love Greg's intellect and insight and the way he looks at things. How has your week been, Greg?
My week has been terrific, actually. I've got a lot of writing done this week and really kind of enjoying we do a lot of hiking around our house. It's nice that we have access to that here in Oregon. So it's been pleasant. And fortunately for us here in Lane County in Oregon, we are very few cases here. So I feel very blessed for that, at least for our community.
That's good. I just gave you the numbers from Erie County, and for people that are listening from around the country, Erie County, where I live, which is where Buffalo is situated, we're at 1,059 cases today. Our curve is starting to climb up. We're 381 miles from Manhattan, so we're a little bit behind New York City, and where that's going to come and where that's going to lead to.
Fortunately, here in Lane County, I mean, Oregon was an early adopter of the stay-at-home practice, and Lane County being somewhat rural, we have a total of 28 cases now and one death. So you can see that we're lagging pretty far behind. They anticipate our peak will be the first week of May here.
Right. They're Governor Cuomo, and you know, and I know that I spend every morning coffee time with the governor. As it's amazing, as do a lot of people across the country right now. They would rather listen to what he has to say than some other people. But and he said, we're in for a rough week this week in New York State. We're in for a very rough week. The figure this morning was, and I told you before we came on air, we're at a death every 2 minutes right now in the state. And because that includes New York City, the five boroughs and the six counties around New York City. And then the other city that has my heart, New Orleans, their death rate is double that of New York City. I have a very good friend down there, Lori, who I talked to this morning, that basically is afraid to leave a room right now except to walk her dog. That's it. You know, she doesn't even like going outside.
Yeah, and I think that's true for a lot of people. There's a great deal of anxiety, of course, around finances, economics, health care. People are worried about getting sick. Of course, in our country, without access to universal health care, getting sick can be an economic disaster all on its own. So people are avoiding going to the doctor who maybe should be. It's you know, kind of a bad situation.
And you know me very well. We've known one another a long time. But my job dissolved, and you know why. I mean, I think it's at $10 a barrel this morning, but my job went away. And so I went from consultant who was paying for Blue Cross Blue Shield and was on the phone all day Friday because New York State opened its exchanges up, even if the feds aren't opening theirs up, and applied for Medicaid. It's like, because I have no income, you know, so it's it becomes that entire game of, where's the money going to come from? Where's the health care going to come from? And because this is you and I talking, we can expand on some subjects and go into some philosophy behind things, because I can't see the system we had being sustainable when we come out of this.
Well, and that's what I really wanted to talk about this week, is the ways in which I can see the culture shifting and some of the ways people will change. In politics, there's a term called the Overton window, which I don't know if your listeners know what that means. The Overton window is a theoretical concept of what is considered an acceptable point of argument in a political debate. And that window shifts to the left or to the right. 20 years ago, gay marriage would not have been in the Overton window. But then the window shifted until that became a legitimate topic of political discourse, and then things changed. And that's the point of how we change politics in this country. It's not that one person gets elected and things change. It just doesn't work that way. And as much as I personally love Bernie Sanders, I admire Joe Biden. I've met Joe Biden. neither one of them, no one's going to win the presidency and change the laws, because Congress does that. And that's going to take a concerted effort on the part of everyone in their local elections, in their local district elections, and in their U.S. House of Representatives, pushing those people to enact the kind of health care reform that will be necessary for our country going forward. And then it builds up from there. So you really can have an impact locally on that. And that's one of the things I really see changing as a result of what is happening now. Tying health insurance, your ability to access health care, to your employment is irrational in a pandemic when everyone gets laid off at a time, same time everyone's getting sick. Well, and so, but
I think that's irrational at any point in time, and you and I have had this discussion before. The only way you can have a healthy, thriving, growing society, and I'm talking for everybody, is if everybody is well and has access to health care, and if everybody is educated and has access to education. That's the only way you can have a growing society.
Of course, and that has been demonstrated consistently in every advanced society in the history of the world. Certainly currently that is the case. And it's a challenge because much of our country is under control of a kind of conservative philosophy that where you and I can look at an actuarial table or look at any set of data and recognize that when more people have access to things like healthcare and education and opportunity for jobs, and when those things are available, people will take advantage of them. And it will improve the overall cultural system, overall wealth increases. Every possible positive outcome is correlated.
And remember my age. I'm the son of a union man. And I came out of school and went right into a union. And where we had established health care, we had established a decent middle class wage. And because of the age I am, kiddies, guess what happens when you have that and you have a tax rate, a marginal tax rate up there in Eisenhower days? We do things like build interstate highway systems and put people on the moon.
Of course. and unfortunately, you have, the other part of the philosophy argues that there are winners and there are losers, and you can be a winner based on how hard you work, and losers should not have health care. They should die. They should just not exist and suffer, because that is what makes winners, is people who are suffering become winners. And it's an insane philosophy.
The insidious social Darwinism argument it drives me nuts. You and I have that same sneering view of libertarians going, really?
Right. Yeah. So I anticipate that one of the ways in which our cultural, the Overton window will shift, mm-hmm. and it has already shifted toward the idea of Medicare for all, of universal health care. And we have, legit candidates for president who are having that conversation with the American public. As much as there has been resistance for it, I think a lot of that resistance is going to wash away over the next 6 months. And in part because not only people right now are worried about what they're going to do if they get sick, but we're at an economic standstill. These are depressionary numbers, and it's going to be different, in some ways good, and of course in some ways bad, as change always is. But, in 6 months when people have not had health care access and people are sick and dying, this conversation is going to change dramatically and quickly. As fast as gay marriage changed, and that was a decade, it went from not going to happen to law. I think we can see that change happen now with healthcare.
I really think we can. I think that that's going to be. There's two things that I see. Tell me what you think about them, because I always respect your opinion. I'm in complete agreement with you on healthcare that conversation is going to shift, and has to shift. Now, the other thing that I'm seeing is going to be an education, is we're going to come out of this crisis where we were completely and totally dependent on nurses, respiratory therapists, MDs, all of whom are paying off these insane student loans. And if we don't come out of this wiping out that student loan and that debt and say, you did your service, this is ridiculous. We are not going to enrich the banks at your expense, because most of you just put your life on the line for 6 straight months.
I am all in favor of it. My wife, as we know, is a nurse, is a hospice nurse here in town, and she has a large student loan because it's what it costs to get the Master's of Science of Nursing. It's an awesome, expensive endeavor. And I wholeheartedly agree. I think that should be and a GI Bill for nurses is what we need.
Right. You know my stance on it. My oldest son is an ICURN in a COVID-19 unit. And it's like, I know he's risking his life every day right now.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, and that's not an exaggeration. That's not hyperbole. I have a son who risks his life every day for his patients and for everybody.
And they're dying, and people are dying on the front lines who are working in the healthcare industry. And I think a GI Bill for nurses, a similar bill for that, in part because we're going to need many more of them, but we already do. Education, I would love to see our educational system alter as a result of this crisis. Students are learning from home. Homeschooling now is obviously the predominant way students are learning this spring. Mm-hmm. And so the resources that are being created in real time to satisfy that immediate need is going to generate some change in the way students learn. I think you're going to see a lot more individualized, student-centered, student-oriented learning, which they can choose from these units that are set up for homeschooling and engage in that way. We've sort of seen this model building over time, but this is one of those inflection points where, as a result of students having to be home and learning, the available resources are shifting dramatically, and so that's going to affect that long term. So it'll be interesting to see, certainly in the K-12 for that. I'm more interested in seeing how higher education is going to shift. The higher education system has been under attack for the last 2 decades. Not many people know what has been happening in the academy in the United States over the last 2 decades, but there has been a concerted effort starting back around 2000, 2004, under the Bush administration to really take over the American university system and run it more as a business model, turning out people who can be accountants and programmers and nurses and, a process of feeding into the American workforce while undermining humanities and social sciences and, the ways in which universities help people think about culture and group and living. And one of the ways they've done that is they decimated, absolutely decimated the ranks of professors at universities. 20 years ago, half the people teaching at a university had a PhD and was a professor of some kind at that university. Today it's like 10%. And the rest of
the number is the number is that low, Greg? I mean, I was not aware of that.
Yeah, absolutely. The rate of unemployment among PhD holders in the United States is before the recession, before this started, was already the highest. It was, in the mid 20%. And it's because universities can pay people with a master's degree less money to teach basic courses, and then they have to pay PhDs. And, the number of open lines are smaller. Many of my colleagues who are still managing to, work in that environment, talk about the increasing hostility toward professional teaching at the university there is among the management of the universities, which have mostly and almost wholly been taken over by corporate CEOs, vice presidents, people who work in a capitalist system. And part of it was philosophical, that university tend to turn out more liberal thinking people, and they didn't like that politically. So part of it is that, and part of it is I don't know, this disdain for the idea of critical thought, critical thinking, fact based, evidence based, scientific thought,
which I will never get again. My age, and when I went to college, we all know I'm a technical guy. That is how I make my living. It's what I do. But through high school and college, it was the humanities that allowed me to develop as a person, that allowed me to learn to think. I mean, my technical courses are what taught me how to make a living, but it was my literature courses, my philosophy courses, it was the courses in the humanities that taught me how to think critically and reason critically.
Right. And those areas are under attack in higher education by forces who are more interested in people who think the way they want them to think rather than think for themselves. And it is prevalent. It's happening in every university, particularly in state and university systems. Some are better than others, but it's a bad scene right now. It's extremely difficult for PhDs to find work at universities in the United States.
Mm-hmm. Now,
I would really like to see some of that change as well as we come out of this pandemic, but I don't know. I don't know what effect that's going to have.
Right. That's one of those we'll have to see. And for those of us who have a vested interest in it, not just see, but try and begin to move the anchor on the boat a little bit and see if it can't start to be shifted.
Yeah. You know, parents are paying $50,000 for a bachelor's degree these days at a school where the teachers have, you know, master's degrees, and you know, which is not to knock down a master's degree. Of course, that's hard to attain, but a PhD is a person who spent, you know, their entire, you know, decade of their life learning how to help people think critically for themselves, how to teach. They know the material, they live the material, and we have this brain drain on the university level that is unfortunate. So I'm hoping that will shift. Other areas, economically.
Oh, and that's really where I want to go with you, because I've had some exciting interviews this week and some exciting personal experiences. So let's go there.
Yeah. I mean, economically, we're looking at, no one has ever seen this, and no economist, no talking head, there's not an analyst, there's not an opinion maker anywhere on this planet who can look you in the eye and say they know what's going to happen next, because
they cannot.
They're just guessing. It's all a guess right now because what we're going through has never, ever occurred. Now, it will shift back a great deal in a few months when people start going back to work. It will help. But the kind of gut punch the economy has just taken by, you know, 10 million people are in the last 2 weeks have filed for unemployment. I expect that to double over the next 2 weeks.
I really expect an unemployment. I heard the federal administration try and predict a 30% unemployment rate this week, and I'm going, in my head, I'm going, nope, 40%.
Yeah, I think it's going to be closer to 40. You know, high 30s would be my bet right now. Yeah. And so a third of the workforce is going to be sitting idle for at least 2 months. And there's just no way an economy can take that kind of contraction and not have it affect everything down the line. And so no one alive, no one listening to this show has lived through the kind of economic depression that is going to befall us over the next couple of quarters. Now, at the same time, there are a lot more tools available now for dealing with that than there were 100 years ago. So a lot remains to be seen. Again, there is just a guess, but the hope, the goal is to have sort of a V-shaped economic downturn that, you know, but I think realistically we're looking at least 2 to 3 years of recessionary numbers before we return to, you know, something into a healthy economy, get back below 7%, 6% unemployment.
Now, personally, and I could be way wrong because I often am, we know that, but I am looking back 100 years ago and going, okay, we got this many people out of work. So depending on who's in Congress and who's in the White House, and we've got crumbling bridges and roads, we've got so many. It's like bring the WPA back, you know.
I agree. And now is the best. It's the best time to do that sort of thing. And you know, people worry about, well, the deficit's so high, the debt is so high. Yes, it is, but it's not going to get better if we don't invest in the kinds of returns that will begin to bring those things down on the long curve. Tax reform has got to be top of the list. We need to fix that, get that back to something more closely resembling the late 90s.
Yeah.
And then, the WPA, I think, is going to be necessary. I mean, people are so desperate. The billionaires, the investor class, right now are looking for safe havens to put their money, and the 10 and 30 year treasury yields are a fraction of a percent right now. They basically are giving us free money to hold on to for 10 years or 30 years.
Oh yeah.
Now, yeah. I mean, it costs us nothing right now to take their money. And especially relative to inflation, we actually are making money relative to what they're loaning us, just right. letting them do it. So we should take that money and invest it in good paying jobs, rebuilding our bridges. The Society of Civil Engineers estimated it would take $2 trillion just to repair the existing bridges in the United States and basic infrastructure.
Yeah, and that, but see, that genders another question that you and I have talked about. Be careful, folks, because Greg and I are going to go off on a tangent here, and I know him. But you and I both know money is a construct, and people have somehow gotten it in their head that money is real. Money is a construct. That's all it is. I mean, it's not, because it used to be based on gold. It's based on nothing now. It's based on ones right. and zeros. It used to be based on the price of a barrel of oil. My old industry. Guess what? Oil is trading below $10 a barrel. Yep. You know, money is a construct. It's a mental construct.
And yeah, it has value because we agree it has value as a society. And that's it.
That's it. That's the only reason. It has no intrinsic value in and of itself.
Right.
You know, it's, and so when, and when I say that, and when I say some things that have happened this week, and going back to that 100 years ago, what I'm seeing start to happen here, at least in Western New York and in Buffalo, and when I look across the country, I'm seeing it elsewhere, is all the mutual aid networks that have sprung up. Suddenly I went from just by myself, you know, doing essentials runs for vulnerable populations for grocery and pharmacy. We now have, here's where we're at by today. By today, we've got 35 drivers. We have a woman who got laid off that was a truck company's logistics scheduler.
Great.
Right. So literally, as volunteer work, you have this entire force of people that have a schedule, that know who they're delivering to. We have shoppers who are getting it ready. So all you have to do is pull up, grab an address, go. So you're not double exposing yourself to the virus by both shopping and delivering. We have shoppers right. and we have deliverers. And it's classified by, I have a pickup truck and I'm experienced at doing it. So, right. okay, Kip's a veteran. He knows what he's doing and he's got a truck. He can do 4 deliveries at the same time if we just put him in the bed of the truck and map that out. Now, that's right. happened all in just 2 weeks, mainly due to the efforts of this wonderful group of people much younger than me. I'm the old, grizzled old man. I'm the guy with one name in the dystopian apocalyptic wasteland. I'm the old man with one name, you know, but due mainly to the efforts of a lot of young people who in 2 weeks put it all together and made it start to happen.
And that's a key point. I kind of touched on it last time we talked, but one of the key differences and one of the ways that I see our culture changing is while we are entering this economic depression, it's one of the ways that it is different is the generation, the millennial generation, has better organizing and development tools at their fingertips than ever existed before. The ability to organize a project like that quickly, the ability to confer with people quickly, all of the tools necessary for wealth creation and idea creation are at their fingertips, and that's going to happen. You will see a revolution, a renaissance of startup businesses come out of this depression because people will have to. They'll have no other choice.
Yeah.
And so entrepreneurship will skyrocket over the next year. And that's not a bad thing.
And as we come out of this, you're going to see me, because we're friends, get very insistent with people in my generation and my age. I'm doing what I do now because it's a crisis. But once we come out of this, my job is to step the hell back and say, what help do you need from me to these younger people? Instead of saying, well, gee, this is the way it should be. And I think that's going to be really important for people in my generation to remember. it's going to be our job to step back because it's going to be their world. And say,
well, and they're going to have to remake it for themselves. I mean, right. And one of the we talk about politics a lot, but what's key that we find often in that generation is they don't identify themselves as Democrat or Republican. They just have needs, and they tend to be more focused on the Democratic Party because it's the closest to their needs.
Mm-hmm.
But if it doesn't meet their needs, they're not going to vote Democrat just because it's a Democrat. They don't identify with politics the way our generations identified with politics.
No, they don't. Not at all. Yeah.
And so it's, you know, they're going to have to build whatever comes out of this for themselves and build the nation the way they want it to be. Because it's not going to be the way it was ever again.
I have been talking to some of them because as we've all gotten to know one another and they understand mm-hmm. that I have a union background and all of that, but I studied history and humanities. So we talk about things like guilds and unions
right.
and the force of collective bargaining and the force of a collective group of people saying, and you know where I'm going with this, saying, oh, we're essential workers. Fine. Guess what? We just stopped working today. Now,
right.
deal with us.
Well, the union movement grew out of the last depression.
And I think you're going to see it again. I really
oh,
do
absolutely.
Think you're going to see that again.
Absolutely. My wife is a member of a union, mm-hmm. and I will never work for another organization that doesn't have unionization.
Yeah.
It has been the best experience of her working life to have that kind of representation, that kind of support, that kind of bargaining power. So that she is cared for and taken yep. care of in her position and the work that she does. It's
in,
vital.
In my apprenticeship all the way back when I actually had hair and it was long, brown, and curly,
mm-hmm.
there's another whole story behind that. Quarantine haircut happened this week, and I'll be wearing a hat the rest of the spring and summer. It was me and a beard trimmer. It was ugly. But, yeah. But all the way back then in the 70s, part of my apprenticeship, part of the school was we did a history in union and how unions got built and
right.
a history of unions and why they were so necessary and the sacrifices people made at the time to get
right.
those unions built to make sure that everybody had a living wage, that everybody had
right.
retirement and health care and benefits.
Right.
Yeah. So, it's been interesting having that conversation with them. It really has.
Right. Yeah, I think it's going to be a very different world 10 years from now, just because politics are going to change so dramatically. And economics are going to change. I think you'll see people go back to, as our grandparents did, go back to, building savings, having wealth of their own, because, mm-hmm. You know, the kind of debt cycle, debt burden, debt economy that is promoted as, quote unquote, as modern capitalism. Is unsustainable. And people, you know, you have an entire generation that said they have no wealth, relatively speaking, and
yep.
they've got nothing now.
I mean, drawing on pop culture, which you and I can do because we watched the same going all the way back to Doctor Strange and Mordo, the bill always comes due.
The bill Absolutely.
Always comes due, and you cannot live in that cycle of debt. With constant debt and I don't call it interest. I call it usury. You know,
mm-hmm.
you cannot live in an economy that is designed to make banks wealthier and not allow
right.
individuals to grow their own savings, to grow
right.
their own personal wealth. Even if that wealth is only $2,000 in savings in the bank, it's still personal wealth to them.
Right.
And you cannot live in a cycle of constant digital ones and zeros that are always debt. The bill
right.
will come due.
Yeah. Well, that bill is due. The next
yeah.
few months are going to be hard. I encourage people to grow gardens. You know, find people that you like just to live with mm-hmm. because we're going to see a lot of people doubling up, tripling up in housing just as out of necessity.
Ash and I have talked about that. I have a big house here in Buffalo, and he has a mm-hmm. three-story with a finished basement that he's working on right now. In Buffalo,
right.
and we both know within by the end of this year that our houses are going to be full of our friends, and
of
they
course.
Should be. You know,
yeah, yeah.
I will always provide safe haven for my friends. I'm getting ready to put a garden in, and everybody should be scared because he's looking up the plans for Tesla coils, big ones. And we, we think we have the parts to build a really big one.
That's awesome.
Between
That's
the
awesome.
Two houses, we think we got it. We think we got the parts to build a really big one.
yeah.
Yeah, we're dangerous when we're unchaperoned, and it's just the two of us. Yeah,
that's wonderful. Hey, I've got to run off my next appointment.
Absolutely. You know, I love you so much, Greg, and I want you and that lovely wife of yours to continue to thrive and grow, and most of all, be safe out there.
We will. Okay. And you guys take care of yourself, everyone out there. Wash your hands, stay home, take care of each other. this too shall pass.
Yes, it will, and we will go on to something better. Love you, brother.
Bring it there.
Yeah, talk. Greg Haley. And I love having Greg on Sundays, because we talk about what's coming after and building something better. Because, yeah, we got to survive this crisis, this moment, and most every other night, you know, we're providing information and resources. And I love my conversations with him. It was just like the conversation with Imani on Friday. If I look back at the week and everybody who's been on this week, let me look. This is Desolation Angel Radio. And for those who are listening for the first time, my name is Kip Williams. This was a radio show that I had for 8 years. And I would put on once a week, a couple hours worth of music and talk. And it was about me. And could not do that anymore. So going back to last Sunday, just this week alone, because I've been doing this since the start of March. So going back to Sunday and every night this week, we had Nicole James on one night, nurse Kate Dalton, 40 years as a respiratory therapist, had her on. Had Avi Shalom on from right here in Buffalo one night, and Bridge Rauch one night. And they both have been part of and involved in from the very beginning of the Buffalo Mutual Aid Network, a peer-to-peer support network that gets food and services out to people that during these times would not ordinarily do it. And it grew and it boomed. And we all know that I've been doing this since the beginning, and all of a sudden we're all part of this. As a matter of fact, I was talking with Clinton, who was on a couple weeks ago, and Avi today, in terms of food delivery. I mean, the number of people that have stepped up, we now have someone who got laid off from their job as a truck logistics dispatcher who is setting it up at home, knowing who owns a pickup truck, who owns a car, who's capable of what, and actually can schedule all of those deliveries. It's amazing what's happening with the Mutual Aid Network, and we talked with them about Feed Buffalo and making sure that everybody here stays fed. Had Imani White on one night. I've known Imani 30 years. 30 years. And we talked a lot about language, about working with and through the fear of all this, about the choices, about what's moving forward, and other things that are happening under cover of this on a national basis. I loved that conversation with her. Talked with Hollis and talked with Brighthawk about what they're offering virtual and online in terms of intentional fire ceremony, drumming ceremony. As a matter of fact, today's a Sunday. And I know for 12 hours, the Web of Love went around the United States an hour at a time, and it's still going on right now, offering that kind of thing for people. And then, of course, tonight with Greg, where we talk about what can come out of this that's really good, what can come out of this that is a forward look. Makes me happy, because we have to look forward. And we have to include every voice. If you're listening to this for the first time, my name is Kip Williams. I can be found on Facebook. Trust me, the picture matches the voice. Desolation Angel Radio can be found on Facebook. It can also be found on Spotify, on iHeartRadio, on iTunes, on Apple Podcasts, no paywall. If you have those, it is a free subscription, and you get every episode free, where every night we bring different information and resources. And if you're listening to it through this link, look for it on Podbean. You will be at the Master Library, where I give you all 8 years for free, and most importantly, this last month worth of shows every night with all the information and resources and perspective and voices around the COVID-19 crisis that we all face. My name is Kip. I live in Buffalo. The phone number is 504-717-8386. If you are a member of one of those vulnerable populations, elderly, over 70, cancer patient, transplant patient, immune suppressed, people with underlying heart or lung conditions, people with diabetes who should not be out at all, because I'm telling you right now, as of tonight, Buffalo and Erie County have said they will now enforce the governor's pause order because too many people are still ignoring it. And what that means is fines. And you will be stopped from doing what you're doing if you are not practicing that 6-foot distance. And if it, you know, a gathering of 4, 5, 10 people. It's going to be broken up. We have to stop the chain of transmission. Our numbers are horrendous here in New York. They are horrendous in New Orleans. They are horrendous in Detroit. They are building everywhere. Hopefully we will reach our apex this week and start to level off in New York. But I'm in Buffalo, Erie County. We're 381 miles from Manhattan, so it's still marching west towards us. And we are still on the way up, looking at the numbers that we have tonight. Wherever you are, please be safe. And because of some conversations I've had today, you have the right to ask the people around you to keep themselves safe and do the right thing. Not be sneaking out to hang out. Not be just freaking out and running out without a mask. The recommendation came down from the Surgeon General for the United States that all of us wear masks in public. Please respect that. I don't want to catch it from you. You don't want to get it from me. Even though I don't show any symptoms, I could be an asymptomatic carrier, so could you. And until we get this under control and until we have better testing, until we have the serological testing to see who's had it and built the antibodies for it, until we have better, more available quick testing to know who has it, everybody has to assume that they have it and everyone around them has it. And it's about being safe, not paranoid, because it is possible to carry it asymptomatically, give it to somebody else who might die, or give it to somebody else who might die. And I wouldn't want that on my head. All right. But what I said in terms of my phone number and me, I can take care of your grocery and pharmacy deliveries for you. Even if I can't, I can direct you to the Buffalo Mutual Aid Network or Feed Buffalo for any of your needs. And the other thing is I want to hear from you. I want to hear from you. I want to hear your voice, your perspective. Greg is somebody who's on regularly. Imani will be on regularly. We will hear from some more nurses this week. We will hear from some more mutual aid people this week. I'm looking forward to one night where we're going to talk about addiction, because the model for 12-step meetings has instantly changed overnight. And if you are somebody who has an addiction of some kind, or are quarantined, or self-isolating with somebody who has those issues, you'll find that night extraordinarily helpful. So please keep tuning in. And Greg, like I said, Greg asked about the music. Well, we lost Bill Withers this week to COVID-19. And yeah, I'm going to play Lean On Me. But what I'm going to play, and Greg asked for it, I'm going to play a version of it I have that is live from Carnegie Hall in New York City, which is dark right now. We've lost Bill. Carnegie Hall is dark. And it is so appropriate to play this version of it. I love you all. I got your back somewhere out there in the night. If you need anything, anything at all, do not hesitate. You call me. You call on me. You lean on me. I will not let you down.
Tomorrow, lean on me when you're not strong. just call on me, brother, when you need a hand. We all need somebody to lean on. I just might have a problem that you understand. We all need somebody to lean on. If there is a load you have to bear that you can't carry, I'm right up the road, I'll share your load. If you just call
saying good. Let me hear you do that one more time. Hi, you just call on me, brother, when you need a hand. We all need somebody to lean on. I just might have a problem that you'll understand.
Call me, yeah, we need a friend.